Back on the Jeff Calkins Show, let's do this Chris Harrington deal. Chris Harrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
It's Going to Dallas by the Mountain Goats. Some fairly recent, newish music for the Grizzlies, who are starting their preseason in Dallas tonight.
All right. So, first of all, how was the lobbyist? I saw you went to dinner at the lobbyist over the weekend. We discussed this. How was it?
It was very good. We chowed down on some vegetables from West Florida, produce at least. There was a corn ribs dish that was at least new to me. That was our favorite thing that we ate. Very good.
What are corn ribs?
So it's basically, it's a treatment I'd never seen before, but basically it's corn on the cob, but cut into slivers. And so you eat it sort of like a rib, like you eat the corn off and then you discard the bone, basically, so to speak. And it was tossed in some Calabrian chili oil with some blistered tomatoes, or a really nice mix of sort of sweet and spicy going on. It was thoroughly delicious.
All right. So preseason starts tonight. Do you recall anything from any preseason past? Like, is there a preseason? We talk about whether summer league means anything, and it normally means something if someone is, you know, disastrously bad and you expect them to be maybe taking a step forward or something. But, like, do you recall much that we've learned from past preseasons?
I mean, it's hard enough to remember past regular seasons. I think I'm sure there are things that we've learned in past preseasons, but I can only keep so much in my head over time. And so nothing jumps out at me about preseasons.
Nothing stands out to me about preseasons either. It does strike me that what's most intriguing about this preseason, obviously we're not going to have everybody healthy. Jaren's not going to play, et cetera. But is the offense, right? I mean, this is the first look we're going to get at this new offense.
Well, it's that and Zach Edey, and those things are sort of related to each other to some degree. But I do think it's those two things. I think it's seeing Zach Edey, like, you know, you step up. You only saw him really in one summer and change. And so now you see him in a preseason game as you keep sort of moving up the ladder there to real NBA basketball. And then, you know, to what degree, what does it look like? To what degree is it different? They look, I mean, it's a first preseason game, so, you know, it's not like, you know, a pass-fail situation or whatever, but we're starting to get a look at it.
The Zach Edey thing is interesting because I don't know if you saw, there's Amin Hassan has a podcast that he does with Izzy Gutierrez, and they just basically last week said, I'm not buying Zach Edey. And it's interesting. I guess for most rookies, no one's either buying or not buying because they're not in a position where you have to buy or not buy, right? But because he's playing, because he's being ostensibly the starting center for a team that should be a contender, it's sort of different. It is interesting that people have really strong opinions on it's not going to work, you know?
I mean, that's not really new. I mean, a lot of people have strong opinions about Zach Edey all through his college career and all the way up to the draft and after the draft, including, by the way, at least before the draft, lots of Grizzlies fans were out of Zach Edey. Like, you know, I quoted many of them in my column for that night about what a disastrous thing that Gleiman had made. I think people, you know, to some degree, some of those people talk themselves into it when he's playing for your team now. I was, not always, but at least as a midway through last college season, I think on this show and elsewhere, I was pretty positive about Zach Edey and remain so. But, like, nobody knows for certain. He is an unusual player. And, like, I don't know. Also, people are allowed that negative about players who play for your favorite team. So, who knows? Maybe Amin Hassan is right.
Oh, no. I think there's a reasonable chance that, who knows? Of course he could be right. It's just interesting to me that it is he is – I don't know if any other rookie is as polarizing. I don't believe one is, right? Like, you think Stephon Castle is or not. Yeah.
This is not a rookie class where there's high expectations of immediate returns. And so you have to sort of have a certain stature to be polarizing.
Right.
And most of the rookies in this class, people aren't expecting much anyway. And so, you know, Zachary Richichet is polarizing to some degree, but like also like he's the number one pick in the draft, and like no one's expecting him to be more than like a the fifth best player on the team on a mediocre team at best, you know, at least this season.
Zach Edey did not only participate in, he participated in and helped win the three-point shooting contest. Do you think?
I don't think he did, but I don't think that matters. Like I think the Bane. It was such a cluster. I think the other side, the Bane Laravia, actually won the 3-point thing, but also they weren't really keeping score in a way that anyone could see, and everyone seemed confused about it. But whatever, he was out there shooting threes.
I'm just reading what your colleague Drew Hill said. He told me in his account of the event that they won. How did he look shooting threes?
He looks okay. Of course, like, you know, shooting threes uncontested is one thing. Shooting threes when against NBA defense, you know, when you're into a game, and it's just a different kind of thing. I mean, it's what we've seen from other players. I mean, right. I think mechanics sometimes don't hold up as well under that kind of pressure as fatigue sets in, et cetera. So I think at a baseline we're learning he has some natural touch and shooting ability. I think it's not a non-starter, the idea that he could be a viable three-point shooter, at least a wide-open three-point shooter. And so I think, you know, the test of does it look okay uncontested in a shoot-around situation, the answer is yes. That's sort of a first rung on a ladder. I do think the ability's there. He's mostly going to be taking wide-open shots anyway.
Right.
It's not like Brook Lopez takes a lot of contested threes, and that's like the best-case scenario for a guy like this. I do think there's a very good chance that he develops into a viable sort of wide-open three-point shooter in the near future. I do think he can do that. But I don't necessarily expect him to come out and, like, you know, make five threes.
Do you expect him in an average?
That to be part of the menu?
Yeah.
But you want him to be wrecking stuff around the rim for the most part.
Do you expect him in your average, whatever, 24-minute performance to put up a three or two?
Yeah, I think there's a good chance he averages like a 3-point attempt a game. Something I was on where the over under, I guess it was true. It was like how many threes is he going to make in a season?
Yeah.
And I was going to set the over, like this season, I was going to set the over under at like 15. You know, like do you make one? If you play 60 games, do you make one, you know, every fourth game kind of thing? I could see something like that.
What else struck you? Did anything particularly strike you from the open practice Sunday?
Well, they don't scrimmage anymore, so it's hard to glean things that are relevant to the season.
Right.
It's mostly just like, you know, a way for people to get down there without spending any money and get excited about the team and see the players and, like, you know, there's some dancing and stuff. They did a all-star style skills competition thing that was actually well organized, and that was actually a lot of fun because everyone got into it. After that, the other stuff, they seemed pretty disorganized and maybe less effective than it could have been if it was a little more organized. But at least you had the bookends. You had the fun skills competition at the first. You had the rookies dance at the end, and both of those things were good fun. But there wasn't a lot to learn about anything.
Yeah. Jalen Wells won the skills competition. You expect him to be a hustle all year long?
No. He's on a main roster contract. And
right.
So I think he will be on the Grizzlies bench, but not in the rotation for most of the season. He may have some time down with the Hustle. He may have some time on the floor with the Grizzlies. I think he'll spend a lot of time in practice and then at the end of the bench and, like, looking for opportunities.
Right.
But also, like, that's predicated on the team being healthy. And so, you know, we know how that goes sometimes.
Yeah. It'll be interesting just if whether they want to get him actual run in with the Hustle, I guess, is you know, but we shall see. Cam Spencer still not healthy? Is that the idea? Did he participate?
Yeah, I don't think he was in a boot. I'm trying to remember. I don't think he was in a boot, but he didn't do anything. He didn't participate in any of the drills or whatever, but he was there.
Someone has asked, Chris, and I know you've written about this, but I recently got another request. What's the TV situation? For tonight, it's just NBA. It's NBA TV, I think, is what it is tonight. But what's the TV situation for this year now as we embark on it?
Well, I think it's League Pass tonight. At least when I looked at it yesterday, it was just listed as a League Pass game.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that will be blacked out in Memphis. I'm guessing not, but I don't know that as a certainty. Because it's a road game and there's a local broadcast. And so I would think, I would hope it would just be available on League Pass. If you have that, they to announce it for the regular season. Grizzlies and Valley, you know, whatever it's going to be, whatever Valley fan and however that gets organized in terms of the branding, they put out a release for the preseason. They have notably not put out a release for the regular season. And so it is not, there's not, it is not official yet for the regular season in terms of the team publicly saying this is the situation. My assumption is that it's going to be basically what it was last year, where the majority of the games will be broadcast by a regional sports network run by Diamond Sports, whatever it's called. Maybe it's Bally, maybe it's FanDuel, whatever the corporate like gambling branding is, it's going to be a Diamond Sports regional network, and it will be available on the local cable providers and also be available to purchase for a, as a streaming situation. I think the only thing that's sort of somewhat unknown is whether the Amazon component comes in this season, whether the same thing you can purchase as an individual streaming site, you can also purchase through Amazon. And that's, to me, what's unclear.
When you say notably, do you think they're still to be settled, or they just haven't revealed it? Or what do you have a...
I don't know precisely the answer to that. I mean, this whole thing has been... for 2 years now or whatever, it's been subject to bankruptcy court, and so right. There's been a lot of, like, day-to-dayness with it. I suspect they generally know what's going to happen, and what's going to happen is what I just described. But there are some years where they have already, like the release they put out about the preseason broadcast, in some past years would have been a full-season release. Like, I think last year, like they put out a press release that covered the whole season, and they put it out ahead of the first preseason game. And it is different this year, and I think it's notable just because it's transparently notable that it's not their normal, you know, operating procedure. And so we'll see. But I haven't gotten any indication that it's going to be notably different from last year. But again, this is a moving target.
All right. So then they did work on FedEx Forum, but it wasn't. Anything you could see that was different besides, did you see the Chick-fil-A stand? Of course,
no,
it was a Sunday.
I multiple people tell me the sound system was better, but if no one had told me the sound system was better, I wouldn't have said, hey, the sound system is better. I didn't really hear much difference myself. Of course, it wasn't a concert, right. So I don't know. I mean, the differences, the physical differences, there are some differences in the concession stand stuff, and I'm going to see that tomorrow, actually, so I can't really talk about that today. They're doing a food tour tomorrow, I'm going to. But the other things that they've done are around the sound system and, like, the quote-unquote rigging, just sort of the apparatus up in the rafters that helps them stage concerts and stuff. From a, you know, what your experience is like as a fan sitting in your seats watching basketball, I don't think any of that has really changed.
All right. Mavs tonight. How do you feel about the Mavs this year?
I think the Mavs are going to be real good. I think... You know, probably a top four team in the West in the regular season. We'll see. I think they have a chance to get back to the finals. I think Luka has a chance to win the MVP. I think they're going to be one of the better teams of the league.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. So Chick-fil-A and Coke have come into FedEx Forum. Of course, you got to imagine that on Sunday games will not be available, right?
Indeed. That's the way it works.
That's the way it works.
Like, because there's a Chick-fil-A in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, but it's obviously not open on Sundays. But when they have other events on other days, it is open.
So they don't for Falcons games.
Correct.
For your basic Falcons game, you cannot get a Chick-fil-A.
Like, they could have, like, Thursday, they had Thursday night football.
Principal operation.
Yeah.
But on Thursday night, you can buy a.
It's like the same thing, the Chick-fil-A in, like, the airport.
It is interesting to me that. I immediately said the thing that I'm most looking forward to seeing is the offense, right? Is like what it looks like, which says something given how Zach Edey, of course, is the thing that you're most interested in seeing. Like we think about during summer league, how excited. Now, of course, then nothing was going on in the world,
for
right?
Sure.
But still, Is Zach Edey playing? Is Zach Edey playing? Is Zach Edey playing? Now,
the menu matters. What's on the menu matters.
But it's also true that there has been enough said about this new way of running the offense that I reflexively just said that's what was most interesting to me. But of course, and there, of course, they are related. They're 100% related.
What you want to see is, like, does this actually look like something different? Is this, like, I do think there's this idea of, like, wanting to see it in practice. Does it look different? Or is it just kind of the same thing? Or can we not tell?
And then Chris wasn't interested in the debate about the... I thought it was just... To call it Zach Edey hate, of course, is not right. People can 100% in the same way that some people didn't think Josh Allen was going to be good.
Sure.
Right? You can make statements about players and predictions. Indeed, that's the job, right? I think this person's going to be good. I think that person's not going to be good. Can you remember the last, I guess there was some, when Hashim Thabeet was drafted, that's the last time there was a Grizzlies first round pick who was, I think that guy's not going to be good. And honestly, I think more people are aggressively saying Zach Edey's not going to be good than said Hashim Thabeet, who was not good. So, like, I remember Jay Billis telling us on draft night how good Hashim Thabeet was going to be, you know, like, and so I think there's much more skepticism about Zach Edey. And what's interesting to me about it is that it is just such a big bet the Grizzlies made on Zach Edey. There is no plan B for Zach Edey.
Yeah, but to me, it's a lot like what we saw with the Lions this year, where the Lions knew, hey, our pass defense is what kept us from making it to the Super Bowl. We have a glaring hole. Let's go draft some corners. Like,
well, that is true. But there's the key difference. There's a couple. There's two different. One difference is this: they're alike in that both decided to fix their problem with rookies.
Yeah.
Right.
Through the draft.
So through the draft.
Address it through the draft.
So they went out and got a couple of corners and they addressed it through the draft. And the Grizzlies needed a hole at center. They addressed it. No one looked at the corners that the Lions drafted and said, Kutu slow, man. Those corners are going to stink. They're just not going to translate. They may have put up great numbers. It was Darian Arnold. What's his name? Is that like Terrion Arnold is the Terrion guy Arnold. Who they drafted? Who is the
That's
guy
the
they
Bama
drafted
one.
From the Alabama? And no one looked at him and said he's going to stink, right? They said there might be some adjustments. He's a rookie, whatever else. Whereas Zach Edey, you literally have people coming out and saying, this isn't going to work for him in the NBA. And I guess it just underlines, none of this is new. Again, as he pointed out, this is a debate everybody had leading up to the draft. Like Chris, we were Team Zach Edey. We were, go ahead and draft him. Like, don't, to me, the silliest thing that I heard was, you can draft him at 16, but don't draft him where you are. Well, that's dumb. If he's going to be good, if he's not going to be good, don't draft him at 16. Don't trade down and draft him at 22. And hey, I think later learned he probably wouldn't have gotten there anyway. But that's another reason not to drift down. But fundamentally, if you think he's going to fix your center problem, it didn't really matter where you drafted him. Just go ahead and draft him. And so that was the biggest thing I pushed back on. But it's just interesting when the Grizzlies have made such a clear and big bet on him, when there's obviously a whole group of people who are betting the opposite, who are not stupid people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who are betting the opposite. That's a big roll of the dice. I don't hate it. I still like it for the Grizzlies. I still think I am optimistic. But I don't normally, you know, whatever. You draft Caleb Williams to be your quarterback. There weren't a lot of people telling you he's going to stink. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So when you fill a hole, there's not normally this whole school of people who are like, not going to work. As Chris pointed out, he is more polarizing, A, because he's giant, and B, because he was such a dominant college player that people develop opinions about him in a way that, you know, no one particularly had.
Well, I mean, to me, like, that's a huge part of it. Like, I think about this summer when I was talking with DeMichael, and it's like, when he first started, you know, being around Zach, he's like, what's one of the things that kind of has surprised you being around him? It's like, his level of fame.
Right.
And it's like, you know, one way or it's so rare now we get in the draft where we have a college player that played for four years.
Right.
And
not only that, he was the best player.
Correct. For
two straight years in college basketball.
Yes.
And so, of course, people will develop opinions about him one way or another, right? And it was not, and it's not just a seamlessly, like, Zion Williamson was the best player, and here's the opinions. Wow, he's awesome.
Yes.
like whatever. There are lots of players who can be the best players in college basketball, and they're not polarizing.
Yeah.
They're just awesome. He became polarizing. That's all. It just strikes me that it's so, when so much of your season hinges on that bet being right.
Yeah, but I guess this is
And there is a whole universe of people who are betting that it's wrong.
Right. I guess my whole deal is, are they betting that it's wrong that he will, quote unquote, be a great top 10 pick?
No.
My deal is, I'll
send you this clip. I'll send you this clip and you can play it. We'll do that when we get back. Because it's not that they're not betting he's going to be great. It's they're betting he's going to be able to get it done, you know, at all. Like, he's going to be able to get it done. But I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break. We have a lot of other things to get to. We haven't really mentioned the NFL at all.
Wonder why.
Memphis Tigers had their blue and gray showcase Friday night, and other things to discuss. So we will get to all of that when we return. And I'll see if I can track down this clip to see what you can see what I mean. We'll do that on the other side. It's the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. We were talking earlier about the polarizing figure that is Zach Edey. This is the podcast that I was listening to earlier, and the skepticism about Zach Edey.
I staunchly believe that Zach Edey is not going to work. I don't think his build, his athleticism, and his game fit with the NBA game right now, particularly a team like Memphis that wants to play up and down the court. Memphis seems to think otherwise. Am I wrong?
I don't see it. And I even looked back at the stats for him in college. He didn't take any threes in college.
No.
Like zero. And so I know you don't, you know, you can evolve as a player, but you're ready right away to start and compliment Ja Morant?
So many question marks. That's just, even if he shoots the three well, right? Even if he's a good three-point shooter.
Like, he's not Karl Anthony Towns.
No.
He's not that size, that mobile, can take you, you know, one bounce off the dribble if you close out. Like, he can't do any of those.
He's not Porzingis. He's not Towns. He's not Embiid. He's not Jokic. And again, I'm not talking about all the other things that make those guys special. I'm just talking about A, ability to shoot, and B, ability to move up and down the floor and left and right. He's well behind all those guys.
Right.
I don't see it working, but we'll see.
So a couple things. One, no one expects him to be Jokic or Towns or like whatever. But they're also just saying, I don't see it working, right? I don't see it working. This is Amin El-Hassan, who was worked in the NBA before, and Israel Gutierrez. And that's all I meant. It's just striking that people are betting against it.
Yeah, I guess though, when I listen to that, I keep coming back to, that's not what the Grizzlies are asking him to do.
Well, they just know, but they're not, they're saying I don't think him translating to the NBA. Not, I don't think he's going to be a superstar.
Right, but there's a lot of people that would have written off Steven Adams.
Oh no, I agree. Like, I think you can bet I think it is going to work. You're just saying I think it is going to work.
Right. Well, my thing is, like, I understand if the Grizzlies were starting, if they didn't have Ja, they didn't have Jaren, they didn't have Dez, and they're starting from the beginning, I don't think Zach Edey would have been a good pick.
Right. No, I think we all know he's being picked for a role.
Specific skill set. And
they're saying it won't work.
Right.
Because he can't get up and down the floor.
Right. And I would say, well, his rebounding is going to translate.
Right. I think that's efficiency.
Too.
It is interesting, though, that then in the positionless offense, it made it seem like, well, what are they going to have him doing? Like, is it really? Like,
and I do think that's why when you asked how has it gone from we're now interested to see the offense, it's like, is it something different? Is it something new? Is it something that we're going to look today and be like, are we going to come back tomorrow and be like, maybe those guys were right? Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, this is a weird fit.
All right. Other things I wanted to get to in trying to avoid talking about the Buffalo Bills for as long as possible. Did you see Chris Mack? Chris Mack's now the head coach at College of Charleston. He tweeted out My Life's 360 currently showing, this is on Twitter, currently our Vandy freshman's location. So he tweeted out that his Vanderbilt freshman, he has a daughter who's a freshman, that she was like right there in the middle of the field at Vanderbilt, right? So they checked on their phone and they could see that she was basically on the 50 on the right after the game. It's kind of fun, right?
For like, sure.
You look up and then he has to tweet the following. To the dumbasses who tell me not to control our 17-year-old daughter with Life 360, we don't. I want our daughter to be safe at all times, being that she's 500 miles away for college. She has no curfew, no restrictions, no check-ins. You're free to raise your kids, not mine. So, so what happened was he, in the wake of the Vanderbilt win, Chris Mack, sees that his daughter is at the middle of the field at Vanderbilt.
Right.
He posts it. Immediately you have trolls on Twitter saying, I can't believe you have your daughter under control, blah, 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 like that. And he has to then respond to that. I guess there's nothing surprising about that.
No, that's...
I'll be honest. I don't have my kids. I've never been able to track where they are. I've never had my phone set to track where they are. I probably should have at some points, honestly. I should have at some points had their phone set to be able to track where they are. Is there anything evil or controlling about doing that? As he said, he also said she could turn it off if she wanted.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's like a shared location. Like
that's what it is. It is a shared location.
Like Aaliyah and I share our locations with each other.
That's the thing. You just share your location. And it's not because you're just worried every second of the day. You're just watching to see where they move at every second. I think people just share locations these days, don't you think?
I definitely think. Listen, Aaliyah uses it a lot more than I do. But at the same time, it's like, what if she can't get a hold of me and she's trying to see...
Now, where are you? Right. What's going on here? Yeah, right. Am I worried or whatever else?
Right.
So, no, you would hope that you are not tracking your kids at college every move to see where they are at 2 a.m. at all times.
Here's the reality. He probably saw the scene and he's like, I wonder if she went to the field.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sure he did. He said, oh, yeah, where she is. How is she at the game?
Yeah.
Is she enjoying it? And then he laughs. It's hilarious that she's literally on the middle of the field. She's one of the ones who storms the field. It's too bad you have to deal with this garbage on Twitter. But that's the nature of the beast, right? So there you go. We had the open practice for the Grizzlies, which we talked about with Chris. We did have the blue and gray showcase for the Tigers. I'll be honest. I was on the Tiger message board at one point looking around, and people were like, that was tonight?
Yeah, I'll hand up, and this is, if people want to come at me for this, by all means. This just got completely lost in the weekend for me because it was Friday night, so I had the MUS game early. Then, you know, I got home and I hung out with Aaliyah for a little bit because she had been
But like, here's the point.
Lost in the
here's
weekend
the point.
For me.
This team could turn out to be the team that goes on the deep tournament run, right?
Yeah.
Could turn out to be. But the level of excitement for this team relative to any other Penny team or interest is so devastatingly low. This was, you know how like when Tubby was here, we literally had people who forgot there were Tiger games
on
a certain night, right? You were like,
oh,
Tigers play tonight?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, forgot that. This was kind of a version of that. It was, and you just contrast it to what Memphis Madness used to be when we talked about it for weeks ahead of time and broke it down afterwards. And yes, it was overwrought and overdone and all of that stuff, of course. And I'm not even saying you could have perpetuated that. You just, like, after a point, it gets, how do you top yourself? But the level of disconnect between where we were then and where we are now is kind of remarkable.
Yeah, I think, though, it's a byproduct of everything that's happened, which is everyone has gotten burned on buying into preseason hype and whatnot, and I think we have reached the point where it's like, let's see it on the floor. Because I do think if this team comes out and with as tough as the non-conference schedule is, if they start to stack up some wins, you're going to see an excitement level. I just think everyone has preseason hype PTSD.
I think that's true. Everyone has preseason. Plus, you don't know any of these players.
Right.
It's not like they're coming back for their fourth year. And by the way, Kendrick is going to be starting for the team.
Right.
You know, when Kendrick was starting, like, oh, Kendrick, that's going to be awesome. You know?
Reigning conference
or even Amani Bates. You know, like, it was like there was excitement over – there's been excitement over players on the roster. Tyrese Hunter, is there excitement? I guess that's a P.J. Haggerty. Is there excitement? No. They're going to have to do it the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, it's like wait and see. And like
they're going to have to earn it.
If they're good.
They're going to have to earn it. And Penny addressed that. He said at that event, he said they don't know you right now, but I hope they get to know you because, you know, this down. And I hope that is how it plays out. It would be nice if this were just a 180 from last year. Last year was all hype, no delivery in the end. And hopefully this year is, well, it turns out it's pretty clearly no hype. And hopefully they can follow it up with win after win after win and be the tough-minded team that Penny likes to coach and that he's promised. And again, it, like Parth did a story in the Daily Memphian over the weekend as a reminder, how much better this team is than every other team in the conference.
Yes. And to me, like, one of the more interesting things was to see the height and weights and the metrics from the pro day.
Yeah, impressive.
It does make you realize, like, okay, this team probably is more built in the mold of what Penny wants.
Yeah. All right. Onward to the NFL. So what I enjoyed the most, Jeffrey, what I enjoyed the most was Aaron Rodgers.
Whoo, boy.
That was just the best. Aaron Rodgers with the pick six, and that was a bad pick.
Which one?
I mean, that
pick
one.
Pick six.
The,
was the Van Ginkle?
Bad pick. That was a bad pick.
God, Van Ginkle's ability to just have pick sixes is unbelievable.
Yes. Yeah, no, there's very clearly an art to it. Like, yes. He's really good at this. So that was delightful. And then the pick to end the game, also delightful. And so you have a situation where, you just wonder. He's 40 years old. Again.
I think he missed a couple of plays with the knee. I mean, to me, like, that's the thing. It's like his arm is clearly there. The Jets are still not great up front.
Well, and some of it's also just clearly there is a, he is not on the same page with his receivers.
No.
That you can tell. Like, you wonder some of those back throw things. Like
back shoulder, yeah.
Back shoulders. If he had Devontae catching them, would the result be different? The exact same throw.
It is also interesting how, you know, forever and ever, when someone would go and get the washed-up quarterback or the older quarterback and, like, this is going to be the saves the day, we would write it off. And then Brady goes and does it one time.
And so all of a sudden
and
people
all of a sudden
believe
think, like,
that.
It's this is a formula. It's like, and maybe it just worked for Tom Brady.
So the good news for me was is that before the Bills played the Texans, I had already said whatever happens, fine. It's fine. Because the division, it turns out, which we thought would be formidable,
well,
stinks.
Some people did.
The Dolphins, well, we didn't think the Dolphins would be as bad
as,
obviously.
No, we didn't think the Dolphins would be a bummer. We did think the Pats were going to be bad.
We thought the Pats were going to be bad. The Dolphins, obviously, because the Tua thing, are a mess, although they did beat the Pats yesterday. The Jets, you called it. You knew the Jets would be a mess. The Jets are a mess. Their defense is still decent. And, you know, it's a good Vikings team that they lost to in London. And who knows? If they get Devontae, that may be what transformed their season. But I looked up and I'm like, Bills can lose to the Texans. They'll be 3-2. It's fine. It's fine. They'll still win the AFC East. I did not expect them to lose in quite the excruciating fashion that they did lose. Now, interestingly enough, Mike Sando over at The Athletic.
Yeah.
He does not think it was as egregious.
Okay, I'm with Mike. So for those that don't know, here was the scenario. The Bills force a punt. And it was a great punt inside the five. There are roughly, 40-something seconds?
There's 32 seconds left. They have it at the two.
And they have all the Texans have
all three timeouts.
The situation was basically going to be the same no matter what.
That's the point that he makes. If you had run the ball three times, you would have had, according to his math. So in the end, the Texans got the ball back with 17 with 7 seconds left, right? And then they complete one pass over the middle of the field, and then they kick a 59-yard field goal.
Right.
Okay? So his point is, if you had done the same thing, 6 seconds per running play, made them use their timeouts, right? 6 seconds running play, 6 seconds running play, 6 seconds running play, 7 seconds for the punt, they still would have gotten it back with seven seconds left. Now, at that point, they would have had to use all their timeouts, so they would not have been able to throw it over the middle of the field for the completion to move them into ostensible field goal range. And so that would have been a difference. But his point is the math is fundamentally the same whether you throw it or whether you run it, given that they had all three timeouts. Now, McDermott has come out and said, my bad, I should have made sure we ran it on the first play. To me, the weird thing about that was you would think in those critical moments, he would be dictating whether you run. Like, if he has concluded it was a mistake not to run it on first down, you would think that's the kind of coach decision that the head coach does step in and make. He doesn't call defensive singles anymore. He's handed over that. So why isn't – so that was kind of weird. But I don't know. If you look at the math like this, and you sort of agree.
I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, it's not a guarantee that those run plays take 6 seconds. They're at the two.
Right.
Those run plays could take 3 seconds.
Right. But but his point is, even if they take 6 seconds, they're going to get the ball back.
And the easiest down to throw on was first down. Like, to me, the bigger problem was Josh wasn't good yesterday.
Well, and the bigger problem is, but Josh wasn't just not say he wasn't good. It was an understatement. And he did miss some open throws, but it's also true. They just don't have anyone who can get open.
Well, having Shakir was a big.
Not having Shakir is huge. Diggs was 6 receptions, 82 yards. The Bills receivers, all of them, the wide receivers, all of them, 4 catches, 76 yards. They don't have, without Shakir, they got Mac Collins out there.
That was the thing. Like, Mac had a wide open touchdown, couldn't locate the football.
Right.
Like,
but he is 4 of 18 to wideouts. And so the interesting question will be, everyone thought this was going to be a year of step back for the Bills. They get a lot of cap room next year. You had to eat the huge salary cap hit on Stephon Diggs. You're paying Von Miller for one more year, even though he's, not worth anything. This is going to be a step back year. And then they're going to regroup. They got a bunch of draft picks and a bunch of cap room this summer, and then they go for it. Do you, if you were the Bills, say, we got to go get a wide out? We got to go. Like, the AFC East is wide open. We can win the AFC East. Honestly, the Chiefs look kind of vulnerable. Chiefs play the Saints tonight. So why not? Like, what did the Rams do? What did the Rams do? They went and got Odell Beckham. They went and got Von Miller. They won a Super Bowl. Like, don't you go? Don't you?
Well, I mean, like,
don't you take the second pick? The second round pick you got in the Diggs deal, and go get Devontae, or go get, I don't know.
I mean, you can. I think the other thing is, like, to me, it's like they lost by 3 points against a team that's looked really good, and the clearly more injured team yesterday was the Bills.
That's it. The Bills are absolutely. The first long touchdown that they score, Rasul is looking at is looking over Cole Bishop, the rookie safety, glaring at him, and Cole Bishop shouldn't be playing.
Correct. Now, the thing that I thought was a little bit more interesting in this game is when Nico Collins went out, the Texans' offense all of
ground
a sudden
to a halt.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Plenty about that one. Enough about that one. Let's move on to, you want Ravens Bengals?
Yeah, because I mean, that to me, like, you want to talk about the coaching late game clock management issues. It's like, I just did not think McDermott was. I thought the egregious one was whatever Zach Taylor did. I mean, playing for a 58-yard field goal, and I get it. The snap is the problem, not the playing for the 58-yard field goal. But why, with as hot as Burrow had been, why are you not putting the game in his hands when you got a gift?
Both teams had 8 plays of 15 or more yards. Like, that was
it was a track meet.
It was something. And the Bengals now, Here's the problem. They, you know, at some point, they have four one-score losses. They're a good team.
They're
four one-score
losses.
They're a great
offense. You can tell their problem right now is they have had to – they've had some subtraction on the defensive end. Like, they don't – you can tell they miss Bates. Like, that's a big problem. Like, on defense, they're just – like, they can't really stop anyone.
Rookie quarterbacks had a day. Once again, the Commanders and the Bears both win convincingly. Both rookie quarterbacks. Caleb actually finally had a nice – no, again, it's against the Panthers. 20 of 29, 304 yards, two touchdowns. Bryce Young, they put him back in. And that like, if you want to say we put him back in because we wanted to get some run, because he needed some confidence, he needs some more playing. You know, he's going to have to play his way out of this, whatever else. Head coach literally said, well, we had injuries on the offensive line, and we wanted to get Andy Dalton out of there. They literally are protecting Andy Dalton and sacrificing Bryce Young.
He's their starting quarterback.
It was kind of another crazy week. You got the 49ers blowing another lead.
Well, Jake Moody gets hurt on a kickoff.
Yeah, that killed him.
And they couldn't kick field goals.
Still, they have now blown 10-point leads in the fourth quarter five times since 2017, which is the league high since 2017. Your Giants.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I kind of thought the Seahawks have had fraud vibes. Like, that's the thing. That game wasn't even as close as the score. We had Eric Gray perhaps get into the end zone. There's a fumble that they can't really see where the ball is. That leads to a touchdown the other way. Like, this was just kind of like an ass-kicking.
Tampa Bay Bucks, by the way, are leaving Tampa tomorrow to go practice in New Orleans. They play New Orleans this Sunday. And so they are ahead of Milton, leaving for New Orleans tomorrow to practice in New Orleans. You can cap off the Week 5 slate with a big win over at FanDuel. Build a same-game parlay for Monday Night Football. That's tonight, Saints and Chiefs. New customers, bet $5 and get watch this, $300 in bonus bets if you win a bet on tonight's game. That's right. Win a bet on tonight's game, $300 in bonus bets. Just go to FanDuel.com/Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, to make every moment more this season. Must be 21 or older and present Tennessee. And first online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. What is next?
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Connor's going to be in studio with John. Jeff's going to join them at 1:25. Norton Hurd will be with us today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jason Munn's going to talk with us at 2:40. David Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Go Doors. Have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow for Now Work Is Done.